Coker is willing to relinquish the chair to your time if you will take over here.
Talk as loud as you can so the record on the tape, please.
The original meeting of the Tannenbaum Historical Society is held at the Birch Park Recreation Hall, December 22nd, 1960, at 8 p.m. The meeting was called to order by President Forbes Baker. There were 13 members and guests present. Florence Mann will act as secretary in the absence of Francis Baker. Minutes of the previous meeting were read and approved. The treasurer's book showed a balance of $340.31 on hand. Mrs. N.E. Floyd joined the society as a regular member. President Baker stated we are getting some very valuable material and are in need of a policy committee to handle all recordings and materials. He appointed Harry Hughes as chairman, as he is the chairman of the same committee in the Pioneers of Alaska. These two committees will work together. Charles Kine and Isaac Carlin are also appointed on this committee. Charles Kine said that no one should have the tapes without the permission of the policy committee. There is a chance by mishandling the tapes, they could be erased and valuable information lost forever. That we should set by a means of transcribing all the tapes for a permanent record. The tapes should be saved and labeled, never to be used after they have been transcribed, only in an emergency. The information received should be of the property of the society. That anyone wanting any information from the transcribed recordings should be screened first. The new policy committee will have a meeting before our next regular meeting, and a report will be given as to where the material will be stored. Also, the screening will be set up as to who should get the information, either for personal use or Alaskan history. Mr. Klein reported on a historical magazine. He stated it will take time to get all the material that should go into the magazine, and it should be an educational more than a sensational. We should check and see who will buy the magazines and the amount of copies we will be able to sell. We should write the university to the lower states to find out just how many they would purchase. Then there are the historical societies that would be interested in the magazine. To finance this project was discussed. The publishing would cost locally as follows. The first 100 issues, a 64-page magazine, is similar to the Montana, $2.42, including 43 engravings of $3.50 each. The second 1,000 would be less, or the $1.50 copy. The next 1,000 would be $1.26, and next 1,005. The 5,000 copies for the one that next 1,000 would be 84 cents. There would be a chance that some foundation or angel would finance the project. Mr. Klein will complete the arrangements for the magazine at the next meeting to be held January 26th. The complete meeting was recorded. Meeting adjourned. Florence Mantle, Acting Secretary.
I might state at this time that President Forbes Baker is currently, you know, with the legislature, and Mrs. Marcus is. I like gambling joints in Las Vegas.
But,
and now officers we made the treasurer's report.
The treasurer's report is $340.31. I have a new member that I will be able to tax the money or if it's made out wrong, so she'll make it out, so I have $5 more. So I'll be $345.31 when I catch her.
Any old business to be taken up? Take under the heading of new business, we have a report from Mr. Hughes.
Well, I went out to the university and talked to Professor Kahneman and two of you folks out there, and they were to come up with a decision and call me back, and we'd have a future meeting on it and set up some permanent understanding and agreement.
Well, I can report somewhat on that. Mr. Rowinski and I, that Tuesday with Dr. Wood, and Mr. Rowinski's in the process of drawing up a proper procedure for handling your material, which we hope to be able to report on in the next meeting. I think under the new business, Mr. Khan's report on the magazine.
Yes, now I didn't make enough copies. I only get so many copies passed on to other people who come in to take a look at some of the other people are holding, if you wish. What I did was I broke down the cost based on an estimate by the commercial printing company here in Fairbanks. And Florence reported to you the costs, and I thought if you had something in your hand that you could look at it, the figures would become a little more meaningful to you. We would have to print 5,000 of them to be able to get them for 84 cents a piece, and 4,000 to get them for $1.05 plus each, which really is a pretty good sizable amount of publications. Now, there are several ways that we can change these figures, and until Florence comes back, I won't be able to tell you just which way we'll go on this, or could go on this. He said that he thought that we could possibly get one of the local banks, and I can't speak for Florence, but at the time he said this, the bank of which he is now, for which he is now a director, has been okay, and he might have had that one in the back of his mind. I don't know. He's a member of the new bank, which will come into being here. Maybe he had that in the back of his mind. I don't know. But he also mentioned some of the other banks and thought that perhaps if we would use good taste in our advertising that perhaps we could get one of these angels, so to speak, to underwrite a considerable proportion of the cost of the proposed publication. Now, what I mean by good taste, just an announcement by the bank, and maybe some reference to its location and something of that sort, maybe a picture of it, something that would have a goodwill pull to the ad, rather than plugging any particular service. I think all this has to be explored in a little more detail, but obviously if we could sell, say, the back inside cover, well, actually the preferred positions on any magazine in order of preference are, of course, back cover, but we probably want to use that for picture purposes or keep it clean, I don't know. And then front inside cover and back inside cover, and then the page next to the index page, and then the double truck or the double page layout in the center of the magazine. So it's back outside cover, front inside cover, page next to the index page, and back inside cover, and the double truck in the middle. Now there are five positions there that we could perhaps use to run perhaps two or even three full-page ads, and I think that perhaps those positions would be front inside cover, back inside cover, and perhaps the page next to the index page, unless we want to use the back of the cover. I think we ought to steer away from burying our ads in the middle of the book if at all possible. Also, I think that a magazine of this type starts to look a little too commercial if we intersperse historical information with ads. It just seems to detract from it. And this is the usual procedure of most historical publications. I've looked over a number of them. They try to avoid sandwiching ads in between their copy. Obviously, if we could then sell $1,000 ads, or $500 ads, whatever it might be, whatever price we would put on this, it would be agreeable to the potential advertiser, we could reduce the costs considerably. Of course, we could always reduce the cost considerably by starting out on a more modest scale, but if we plan to sell a publication of this sort, I think it has to have what we call pull for the ordinary reader. It has to have a good cover. It's got to have material in it that the people would want to read and perhaps induce them to take the magazine home with them or to ship out a copy to a friend or to friends. And of course, if we plan to reach any of the universities, other historical associations, etc., we would have to have not only a pleasing format, but pretty good material in between the covers. All these factors, I think, merit really deep consideration. Until Forbes comes back, I can't tell you exactly which direction we'll go there. I did bring along one of the envelopes that the Montana State Historical Society of Montana uses to mail out its publication, and perhaps we should consider providing an envelope of this sort along with it. Of course, the cost would be additional if we were to do so. There is one other strong possibility that we could get someone to buy an ad on the mailing envelope. Also, there's a possibility that if the state moves ahead with its plan to publicize the state by every good means possible, that we could work out some kind of arrangement with the state to get an ad that would put Alaska, the program they're trying to develop, attracting people to Alaska, drawing their attention to Alaska, we might be able to get some support from the state. It's just possible. This is think it's worth considering. It would also be helping what could be a rather worthy cause in the long run, preserving the history of Alaska, and I think that perhaps state officials would look with a rather kindly eye in this direction. They would in a sense be subsidizing this, but they would also be getting something in return, namely the goodwill of the people that were helping, and then primarily the attention of the people who would pick this up, directed more toward Alaska. And of course, you know, you have to spend money to make money, particularly in the tourist business. Well, I think that until Forbes gets back, we can't decide just how we should approach these angels that he spoke about at the last meeting. I do, however, think that there is something that we should start thinking about tonight, and by the next meeting I'd like to get some kind of a response from you people, and that is what exactly will go into the magazine. Now, before we could ever hope to get ads from reputable firms, and I think we should steer clear of a lot of the ads we see. This is Matt Lockrock, for example, a magazine to the last meeting, and this has big pictures of the girly shows and this and that. Well, I don't think we'd want to inject that type of advertising in a publication of this sort. And of course, the advertising should be harmony with the copy, but the copy is of primary interest. I think what we have to do is each time we put out this magazine, if we put it out, is very carefully select way ahead of time the material that would go into it. Now, this material won't have a strong time element to it at all. If it's history, then it won't hurt to have it appear 6 months after we get it, or a year after we get it, because it's been stashed away somewhere for maybe 50 years, or 60 years, or 75 years. And this gives us, I think, maybe 100, 150 years, we might get some Russian material in here, for all I know. This is in our favor, in that we don't have to go to press, so to speak, right after we get the material. We can look it over, we can be very selective about what we put into it, we can judge it on several bases. One, is it genuinely historical material? That's, I think, of paramount importance. Two, is it, while it's material of genuine historical importance, is it the kind that people want to read and would be willing to say, pay a dollar for a copy of that publication? And third, would it really advance the history of Alaska? Would it preserve this history of Alaska? Or perhaps should the material appear in a more popular publication? And fourth, is it the kind of material that can lend itself to a nice, pleasing layout that again would have pull in the magazine? If you look over this Montana magazine, you'll see that there are photographs or engravings with virtually every article in there. Well, people more or less demand pictures because they are worth a thousand words. A picture can tell a story too, it can help to illustrate the story. So I think that we have to judge the material along these lines. And then I think we have to be very careful about editing it, and of course seeing it through to final publication. But there's one other strong point that comes in before it actually goes to the printer, and that is, we have to be able to show the potential advertiser, or the potential subscriber, or whoever might be helping to support this publication, just what kind of material we have. We might have, say, 10 articles, or 10 portions of diaries, or perhaps 6 selections, or 6 series of historical photographs that tell a story too. Tell a story with photograph and captions. And we have to look all, we have to look these all over rather carefully and say, well, initially, we would perhaps want to use this material. It more closely meets all of these requirements that we have to have before we can really print a successful publication. And I think there we would have to put our heads together and agree that this, because it's a more genuine historical value, it's a more a higher readership, if you want to put it that way, because this lends itself to better photograph usage, we perhaps should use these this time. And there I think we would have to have an editorial board to determine this. Now, of course, if a person says that I kept mosquitoes off me during the rush of 98 by chewing snooze and mixing it with spruce gum and smearing it all over my face, this is of historical value, no question about it. I think that someone could publish something about how did people keep mosquitoes off them during the gold rush days. And this, perhaps though, in the total history of Alaska, would occupy two or three sentences, or perhaps a paragraph, rather than, say, 5,000 words, or 2,000 words, or 1,500 words, or 950 words. On the other hand, if we were to weigh that against something that Mr. Mailer mentioned this evening, namely the account written by the man who pedaled a bicycle from Dawson to Nome during the gold rush and in the dead of winter. Now this takes on more historical value because this is another means of transportation. It was another indication of the just how courageous or maybe foolhardy or determined or whatever you want to label these people, how determined they were to get to the gold fields. Right, this might very well be of far more value than an account about how the people kept the mosquitoes off them during the gold rush days. On the other hand, someone might come up with a journal that had heretofore never been published, and this might very well be of far more historical value than the other two I've mentioned. And it also might have the readership appeal. It might lend itself to a photographic treatment or perhaps sketches. And then this probably should be the most important one and should receive the priority for going into the publication. I think that, well, I know that there is considerable amount of material already written about Alaska, and it's in someone's drawer or in someone's trunk, and with some careful editing, I mean, perhaps cutting down or filling in, we could really contribute to the history of Alaska by putting it under a cover along with some more material of this sort. I think that we can consider, since in a sense we are rather closely related to the pioneers of Alaska, we could consider using some of the tape material with the permission of the people who made the tapes. Harry's standing guard over that with a 10-gauge shotgun, so I'm careful to say
that. This quote is the awfully serious.
But I agree with you completely, Harry. I mean, that the tapes remain their property when they come right now, but he'll talk about this later on. We might have material on tapes already which could be transcribed and inserted in the magazine and be, I think, of wide readership, lend themselves to a photographic presentation, and in good taste and everything else. I'm thinking now of Bobby Sheldon's account of the shooting of Sophie Smith. There is an eyewitness version, true story. It's in utter conflict with one I just read the other day. I can't remember where I saw that.
It's in the Western Library.
Well, I read it in a Slick magazine, but I forget where now. I thought about Bobby when I was reading it. That, you see, is ready-made for insertion in the magazine if Bobby would be going to go along with this. The material that maybe Harry's picked up from someone who really had an interesting life in Alaska might also lend itself for insertion in the publication. Now, what I'd like for the membership to do, because you'll have to help me here, is, and matter of fact, we'll have to have an editorial board because this is more than a one-man job. What I'd like for you to start thinking about is, do you have material of this sort available? Now, remember at an early meeting that Frank Young said that he had a diary of, I forgot whose diary it is, but if that is a good diary, if it's of extremely interesting material, historical importance, perhaps it could be edited or perhaps even run.
That's a stack of items down there.
I see. Well, he very well might have.
He'll have some show.
I see. He might have some material there that we could insert. John Miller said that he has this account written by the man who took the bicycle trip from Dawson to Nome. People would read that. I'd like to read that myself.
I have two that could be used. It was from Mission of Pioneers. We're taking their name. One is Jeff Davis, the King of the Hobos, comes to Nome in 1894 on the Flotilla as a cabin boy. I have that one, and I also have about 1 hour on Jack Hughes, the Blind Observer. Those two are worldwide personalities that are known all over.
Yes.
And it might be a thought.
It very, very well might be, but
those two have given permission to you.
Fine. If you people have ideas along this line, or if you know people who have material of this sort, I'd like for you to jot down just kind of a sentence or a paragraph about this so that we can start building up a file of available information. And also, if you have old publications that have interesting material in them, why, if you would jot that down too and let us know about it. Now, the reason I say this is that a lot of these publications that came out in the early days had a very limited circulation, and they sprang up, operated for a year or two, and they died away. But some of the publications still exist. Now, they might have been copyrighted at the time, but back in 1898, say, or 1903 or 1904, if they were copyrighted, they would only copyright them if they went out of existence, for the copyright protection would only extend 28 years. Now, I don't have in mind to plagiarize or steal the material, but simply to insert it in a publication of this sort so that we can disseminate it, reach a wider audience, or put it in between covers that would go into a library or to many libraries all over the country and preserve it in more publications, you see, more widely disseminated to interested people. And there are many more interested people because we know that our population has grown from about 1900, from about 86 or 87 million people, up to 175 or 180 million now. So we could thereby reach a far wider audience and actually bring the lasting history to the attention of far more people. Now, in respect to the old publications, if you have them, and if you think you have some interesting material in them, we'll look it over very carefully to see that we're not infringing on copyright, because you can extend the copyright for 28 years for a total of 56 years. Well, anything that was protected for a total of 56 years would, let's see, this is 1961, so it'd be 1904, anything prior to 1904. The chances are, if the publication went out of existence, the first copyright rights died with it after 28 years. So, if you have any journals, interesting accounts, old publications, or if you know anybody else who has, I would urge you to write this down and let me have it by the next meeting so we can build up this file of material. This doesn't mean we'll use it all, and I have to be very careful there because the figures recorded to prepare us for a 64-page publication, and then we would have to pay so much a page over and above that. We would want to have a rather modest number of pages the first time, but I think we should have a rather nice publication the first time. And this will only come out from time to time. We can't say it's going to come out four times a year, as this Montana, or every month is through the publications of some other historical association.
This might be a help to you. I had an experience this last week. I had some tape recordings transcribed by shorthand off the tape and made into written sheets, and they were only $2 a sheet. down the Fairbanks Bookkeeper Service. I was surprised. She spent a good 2 hours on it.
Is that right?
And of course, as they get used to doing it, they do it faster. But she took it off one short hand as the recorder played it.
Uh-huh.
And then went on the typewriter and transferred it into letter form book.
Very good. Will your tape recorder here, is it up? Can you use
anything
to pedal with it?
Not that one.
I see.
That's not made with any device.
Well, some of them are, and
you use a Wallen sock or some of these other types that are made with an editing device, like we used on the previous recording.
Well, I think that if we can get this file of information and think about what we have on the tapes, then we'd have to figure out what it's going to cost to transfer.
Well, I want to bring that cost up. You see, I've been fishing around to find out what we're going to run into.
Yes. Well, I think that's a good point, and undoubtedly, this would enter into our cost analysis. Too, because it would cost us money to
read. That was a 5-minute tape, exactly. And it filled 2 pages.
I see. Or
it gives you something to figure from.
Yes, it does. I'm glad you got those pages, Harry. All these things will have to be reckoned with. So, again, before I start talking here, if you have material that you think would be of genuine historical value and of interest and help preserve the history of Alaska, if you'll jot it down, a story, an account, a diary, a series of related photographs that tell a story and could be added to just a little bit by means of captions, or if you know other people who have this, if you'll jot that down and then turn those slips in to me at the next meeting, then we can start finding out what is available. I already have in mind now. Mr. Naylor was kind enough to say that we could perhaps use this one about the bicycle trip. We have a couple that you've mentioned. I think that Audrey Loftus would perhaps provide an excellent one. She has, yes. She has already written one, as a matter of fact. She still has it. And I think that we could come up with a publication that would be of genuine historical value. And of course, this is the thing we have to think about all of the time. And then finally, there will be people who say, well, what's in this for me? Frankly, at this juncture, I don't think that we are in a position to even consider paying the person for the material. I don't think this will present too much of a handicap, because actually, a person who has this material and knows that it's moldering away someplace usually is quite happy to have it preserved between the covers of reputable publication, and of course this is our whole aim, to preserve the history of Alaska.
Tonight I had a call at William Stroker's house, his furnace went out, and while I was there, he mentioned that E.D. Cullen's diary is down at Duner, was down at Duner, and it is available, and some of that dates around 1913.
I see.
And he said to let you know that somebody should check up on it. It should be taken and used in publication. I think Mr. E.D. Collins would agree to that, because I have a tape that he's given me already, and I took the tape for 1 hour from it.
Very good. All right.
So that's something to remember.
Yes, it is. You see, these ideas are already starting to come out, and I'm sure that if we move around Fairbanks, talk to people, think about what we might have ourselves, that each one of us can submit some ideas here. And this is what we want, because this will be the publication of the whole society, not just the board of editors who puts it out, or the people who put the bill. I think that if we keep it on a every once in a while basis, that we'll not go into debt. This is the last thing in the world I want to do. And I think we'll be able to have it more or less pay for itself, along with some advertising subsidy somewhere along the way. And finally, I think that the sooner you can get the material, or the list of material available, the better it would be, because then we would have something positive to put together into kind of a mock-up form to take to a potential advertiser and say, look, this is what we want to preserve in this issue, this is what we want to disseminate from people. Good material, certainly for a worthy purpose. I think we might get a little better reception from people who would be willing to advertise for the goodwill of appearing in publication. As Ford said, if it's good material and it's for a
truly worthy of lasting purpose. He said he doesn't think we'll have too much trouble at all.
Is there any of the tape recording that we take at these meetings that would like to be transferred and sent down to Juneau to Forbes Baker and the, in regard to the society?
I think...
Or would you make a separate tape if you want to send it?
Well, I think it would be most worthwhile to let Forbes get his feet on the ground down there. From what I understand, there's not complete unanimity down there.
Right.
And
he said he would like to be informed.
Oh, I know
he
it would.
He asked me to try to see that he is well informed.
Well, it might be very well if he has access to
the
tape.
It helps him
right
down there, and it helps the our members down there that are
that's
trying
right
to get something done.
Okay. Maybe you could give me a summary of what the trustees dictate one point. Yes, I think that might be helpful. I think I'd wait a few days, though.
Okay.
There's one other point, and that is that this magazine is going to move slowly, but we're starting to accelerate just a little here because we have a groundwork laid now. At least we have some ideas about how we have to be selective about the material. We have a general idea of what the cost will be, and we have some ideas about how we can help underwrite the cost. And the next step that will accelerate this just a little bit more will be people turning in that those ideas about material or the availability of material to me.
Would it be advisable for the Saturday to write to the Alaska Sportsman, and they those folks are very nice. They might give us some estimates of costs of what it cost them, and the last two or three issues have been very good with color pictures in them.
Yes.
That would be a thought. It's printed in Seattle, though, I know.
Well, I know Bob Henning very well.
Yes, I met him.
Uh-huh. And it might be helpful to ask him.
And give us a little pointer.
Right. And then I thought I would correspond with the editor when we're ready. I don't think we're quite ready yet, but I thought I'd correspond once we started to see what we had in the way of material with the Secretary of the Montana Magazine of Western History and get a little rundown from them too. I feel that this would be helpful. Any ideas we get along with. But the important thing is the members have to help push this now. We can't put out a magazine without material, and I think this is the next step that we should take. But we find out what is available and be very selective about it, and we know that this is going to boost interest in the organization, and that's one of the reasons too why we talked about it in the first place.
But
that's about the extent of my report.
Just a moment. About 9:15, Jim Young of the News Miner will come by to take a snapshot because they'd like to give us a little story in the paper tonight, but we don't have Adrian on the coil, so you folks that are there, I'll set the recorder over to me and come with a picture. Is that all right?
Fine. We can take a picture of anybody else as far as I'm concerned.
Well, they want to know more about this tape recording to give us a little publicity on it.
I see.
To encourage the use of it.
Fine.
Another thing I think would be nice to introduce all people present.
Jim?
No, introduce all these to everyone here.
Okay, fine. Well, when I sit down, I'm sure that the acting chairman here tonight, or the chairman, will be happy to do that. But I urge you now to start thinking about what's available and get that to me, and then we'll appoint it. I think our next step is to appoint an editorial board and we'll start to consider the material.
Remember, Frank Young told us that Henry Appel's diary was, he has that, and that
yes
was the one that speak about. That's put that in the magazine. And also, Flash Cascadery. They were
right.
Also was going to give that to our mainstream.
All right. Again, I think that that's good material. We might not be able to run it all. We might have to run it in a series if we can project that far ahead, or we might have to synthesize it, or just cover one facet of it. But these people have had fascinating lives, and I think that we can come up with the material. But I'd like for all to write these things down now, because I'm going to start my file. It's going to move just as fast as you people now to help support this thing. I think it's a very worthy cause.
Well, thank you, Chuck, for a very fine report. I have one question.
Yes.
I noticed in your Montana magazine, and I noticed in other historical magazines, I guess, and I'm very, it's rather uncommon for them to carry advertising.
That's right. The only ones I've seen are institutional ads.
In other words, a pioneer in Alaskan banking, cut, address, and place, period. They're very restrained. I would like to come out with none, but on the other hand, being absolutely practical, I think that we might have to explore at least one, two, or three, and that would be the
end of it. Of their words for advertising, you want just the pioneering firms to advertise?
No, not necessarily, but I just use that as an example of how you could tie in, let's say, a long-established bank, tie in an ad, just how you would write the copy for some sort of a new bank to do the very same thing.
It'd be kind of nice if the university would help sponsor the first issue.
Well, it'd be kind of nice if I had enough money to buy the equipment I need for my laboratory for the next semester. You know how come up we are. So what we're doing is, well, we're lending our intellectual support and our physical support, and the university is extremely benefited.
Andy and I talked to Bill Stroker about this, and he would like to have a little more information. I told him that you had thought to drop by the bank one of these days and talk to him.
Fine, next time I go down and get a loan, I'll look him up. No, seriously, we'll certainly do this. But I think we have to have something to show them.
Well, he was interested in this paper that you prepared here.
Very much.
Very much indeed.
He can show him that.
Fine.
That was Harry Abercroft also. In the Nordale Hotel. The prospect for that.
Very good. But what I want is to take them down, say something like one kind of magazine. Then I want to take them down the costs. And I want to take them down a mock-up for our proposed magazine. And what would go into it, let them actually look over the material. Because they're going to do this. I think we could get them enthusiastic about it. Then there's one other angle, and I haven't really worried about this too much, but that is, what kind of a color cover picture will we use? Could we get, say, Rusty Herleen on our first issue, maybe, to let us come out with the lady known as Lou? And then inside, have you seen that?
Yes, hold it.
Well, did you sell it?
No, you
didn't sell it. I wish I had the money. Maybe he would give us permission to photograph that in color. We can get the four-color separation on our cover, which is just about what we have here. And he just might let us do that, or the purchaser might. And then inside, we could say something about service. I mean, keep it on a historical basis. Point out how Paul, we get permission to run the poem to make the cover more meaningful. We could perhaps we have to get that from the publication of the company. But also we could point out the historical research that Mr. Neen conducted to make this an authentic picture. He did a tremendous amount. He looked over equipment, piano stools, kind of holsters the guys wore, the guns they wore, the kind of plants they had. He talked to old timers, and so he really has a true-like quality about this painting. And something like that might just be the thing we need for the cover, but I'm sure we'll be able to come up with a good color cover. This was just an idea. You people might vote it down.
The cover, the first impression is very important.
Right. Yeah. But this is what I say. I'd like to have the whole business all in a nice big briefcase to take them down to these people and say, this is it, and they can visualize it more readily. And if we just give them a verbal presentation, and I think we can get their support there. That's why I think the next step is to find out what we can put in it. Now, tomorrow I'm going to go to see John about the bicycle. Seems to me that people would read that and think it would be a historical background.
Yeah, I'm sure.